produced and distributed by the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws in Washington, D.C. This is your daily audio stash, the growing truth about cannabis. Daily Audio Stash is where responsible marijuana smokers listen in on the latest news about cannabis, hear the voices of the marijuana law reform movement in special segments and interviews, and kick back with comedy and music no other podcast can offer. It's Normal's Daily Audio Stash. More information at normalaudiostash.com. First up today, it's news from Normal. Our news today, safer alternative for enjoyable recreation or safers. Colorado Marijuana Alcohol Equalization Initiative was approved for the November 2006 ballot. Joining us today to discuss the initiative is the director of SAFER, Steve Fox. Steve, welcome to the Audio Stash today.
Well, thanks for having me.
Thanks again for joining us. 129,000 signatures is in itself a massive testament to the support SAFER has across the state of Colorado. You know, what was the petition process like?
We took just over 5 months. We started March 1st and started slowly and picked up heavily towards the end and ended up with that number that we got.
And what's been the public's response to the SAFER organizers out there in Colorado?
Well, I guess the one significant observation is that there's a lot of support out there. And it's not just the people who signed the petition, but the thousands of people who said, I support what you're doing, but I don't want to sign this because I don't want to get in trouble or I don't want to have my name out there. And unfortunately, that's what we deal with. But at the same time, we know that when November 7th comes along and people have the chance to express their true opinions in the ballot box, that it could work out in our favor.
And Steve, what's the Colorado state government's response been to this initiative? Have they been accommodating throughout the ballot approval process?
Well, from everything we've seen so far, they've been pretty objective as far as we can tell. Obviously, they approved it. It doesn't seem like there were any shenanigans there. And when we got the language approved back in February, that went pretty smoothly as well, and the process wasn't all too difficult. I mean, the governor has said that he opposes what we're doing, and the attorney general as well, and the secretary of state was appointed by the governor. So one might not expect that they're going to be all that supportive, but so far so good, at least in terms of the nuts and bolts of the approval process.
I know SAFER does a lot of campus organizing, but this initiative really has much broader support, building on the success SAFER's had in Denver.
Correct. And that's, well, what SAFER is about most specifically is educating the public about the fact that marijuana is a less harmful alternative to alcohol. And that's, we started on college campuses, bringing that message there where the message almost wasn't needed because it was on two campuses, CU and CSU in Colorado, where deaths had occurred from alcohol just a few months earlier. And we did referenda on those campuses and then brought the campaign forward to Denver, thinking we'd do this on a larger scale and get this debate going. And that was the main purpose for doing the initiative, and then we were fortunate enough to have it pass. And then when the Denver officials said that they were going to keep citing people under state law, we said, well, the opportunity is there. Let's just try to do the state initiative and make our point and push the debate even further.
You know, Colorado is very interesting politically and collegiate-wise. And, Steve, you mentioned the tragic alcohol-related deaths there. But Colorado has had a number of extremely high-profile alcohol incidents, many with sports recruiting and underage drinking. Has all this made Colorado perhaps more open to the SAFER alternative?
Well, you know, the funny thing you mentioned, funny that you mentioned that, because that, the CU college football recruiting scandal, was actually one of the first events that made it seem that Safer was best suited for Colorado, and that that would be a good point to start the campaign, and then the alcohol-related deaths came later. So that it is all tied in, and I think there are going to be many incidents. I mean, tragically, just about 12 days ago, a 22-year-old in the Boulder area was seen tending, perhaps, or just looking at some plants, about 11 marijuana plants in a field, and he was stopped by some undercover police, and he, who was just about 5'6", 135 pounds, ended up running away, and he was then stopped by another policeman. They used a taser on him, and he died. And it's these types of things where people see that alcohol causes great harm on itself, and with marijuana prohibition, it is actually marijuana prohibition itself that causes greater harm than the substance, and we're just going to keep pushing that argument forward.
Now, also, Steve, by passing this statewide initiative, will this help perhaps further protect Colorado medicinal marijuana patients?
For some people who use it for a medical purpose that maybe some doctors don't believe rises to a true medical purpose, or maybe they're having a hard time just dealing with the registration system or so on, these people who are perhaps self-medicating will be able to use marijuana, which shouldn't be a problem anyway. As we say, I mean, it's safer to use a little marijuana than to drink beer or vodka. So if someone feels like they need it for some reason, we shouldn't stand in their way.
Steve, thanks again for joining us here today on Normal's Daily Audio Stash.
I just want to thank Normal for everything that Normal has done for us. Alan St. Pierre came out for a fundraiser, and they've been a great help throughout. So a big thanks to Normal.
Steve Fox is the director of Safer Alternative for Enjoyable Recreation, or Safer. Find out more on their website, saferchoice.org. And if you are listening in Colorado, register to vote today so you can make your voice heard on this issue in November. Welcome back to the Audio Stash today. I'm your host, Chris Goldstein. Take a moment to join us at Normal to end marijuana prohibition in America. Just visit normal.org. We have a stash that is full to the brim today of marijuana reform content. Thursdays, we focus on legal and legislative issues, and today we have an interview with the Director of Students for Sensible Drug Policy. SSDP and the ACLU may have found the answer to protect America's college students from losing their financial aid because of marijuana. Joining us today on the Audio Stash is Chris Crane, Director of Students for Sensible Drug Policy. You can find out more about SSDP on their excellent websites, ssdp.org and daregeneration.com. With the help of SSDP and in many cases local Normal chapters, college students across the country have found their voice to call for marijuana reform on their campuses. America's college population is perhaps best in touch with the immediate dangers of alcohol, and students readily make the comparison between the downplay of excessive and underage drinking and the draconian policies for marijuana. Chris Crane, welcome to the Audio Stash today.
Thanks for having me.
Chris, Students for Sensible Drug Policy has been instrumental in a number of campus initiatives, including at the University of Maryland. How are those policies moving forward this year?
Well, what happened there, at the University of Maryland in particular, the local SSDP and Normal chapters ran an initiative, a so-called SAFER initiative, which was actually written by the organization SAFER Alternatives for Enjoyable Recreation, which calls on the university to treat marijuana offenses, marijuana possession offenses, the same way that they treat underage drinking offenses. Right now at the university, if you get caught underage drinking, you get some sort of a slap on the wrist, usually community service. But if you get caught, even with simple marijuana possession, they will call the local police, you'll get arrested, you'll get a criminal record, and you'll lose your financial aid. So what the students did was they put an initiative on the ballot for the student body to vote on, which called on the university to treat marijuana possession the same as they treat underage drinking. That did pass overwhelmingly. I believe it was around 66% of the student body voted for that initiative. And these initiatives have been passed now at the University of Maryland, at Florida State University, that was also run by the normal and SSDP chapters on campus, as well as at University of Colorado and Colorado State University. However, as of yet, none of the administrations have actually implemented these initiatives. These are non-binding resolutions or non-binding initiatives that call on the university government to, or the university administration, to actually change the policy. None of the administrations have done so to this point.
Now, do most of these campuses have their own law enforcement per se?
Most campuses do. Most campuses will have a university police force, but some campuses, particularly a lot of state schools, have a policy where if a student is caught with illegal drugs on campus, they will then go ahead and call the local police in to deal with that student rather than having it be dealt with as an internal matter. In that case, the student then gets arrested. They get a criminal record, which stays with them for the rest of their lives. And because of the Higher Education Act aid elimination penalty, they will lose their financial aid as a result of that conviction. So in these cases, we feel that the penalties are far disproportionate to the so-called crimes that these students have committed, and it would be much better for the universities to deal with these internally the way that they do with underage drinking on campus.
But there are some ways out there that campus administrations can be motivated to enact these student-approved policies.
That's correct. We've been working very closely with the University of Maryland SSDP and normal chapters, and as well down at Florida State, to try and get the university to actually implement the will of the students. And both of those initiatives passed by overwhelming margins. The student body clearly supports reducing penalties for marijuana possession on campus. So we've been helping the chapters work with their university administrations to try and get them to actually implement these initiatives and follow the will of the students. Most of the work that's been done up to this point has been behind the scenes. There's been a lot of meetings between chapter leaders and administration representatives, a lot of negotiations and discussions and so forth, and we're pretty confident that some policies will actually be changed. But for now, it's been sort of done behind the scenes. Now, of course, if the universities decide that they're simply just going to ignore this and they don't respond to any of the behind the scenes work, well, then the next step is probably to go a little bit more public with it.
Now, Chris, back to that issue of campus law enforcement. Would these campus policies prevent the administrations from calling the local law enforcement for minor marijuana offenses?
Well, at least at the University of Maryland, that's the objective. We're hopeful that they'll actually go all the way and implement the initiative as it was passed, which would mean treating marijuana offenses and marijuana possession offenses the way that that underage drinking is treated. However, we'll be happy if they, as a first step, would agree to stop calling the local police and deal with this as an internal matter, so the student doesn't have to go through getting a criminal record and losing their financial aid.
So we've sort of touched on the ways campus police and campus security treat excessive and underage drinking. But what are the real mechanics of that? If you're 19 years old and caught intoxicated and in possession of alcohol, what happens?
Generally, it's a virtual slap on the wrist. You'll get some sort of community service, maybe 10 hours, 20 hours of community service. Occasionally, you'll have to take some sort of alcohol awareness course. And that's generally it. And if you have, if you have more than one offense, they may increase the penalties. It varies dramatically campus to campus. But for the most part, it's usually some sort of community service and some sort of alcohol counseling class.
And yet, underage drinking is illegal everywhere. If you're caught by local law enforcement, you will face some local legal trouble there.
Oh, absolutely. Underage drinking is as against the law as marijuana possession. So there's really no reason that the university should treat underage drinking as an internal matter while turning over students who get caught for marijuana possession to the local police and having them go through all of the terrible side effects that come with a criminal record.
Now, Chris, I know Students for Sensible Drug Policy, among others, are working extremely hard to prevent the College Students of America losing their federal financial aid for marijuana offenses. I know there's been some progress, but are students safe from this yet?
No, they're not. Current students are not at all safe from losing their financial aid. What you're referring to is a law called the Higher Education Act aid elimination penalty. This was a law that was put into place proposed by Representative Mark Sauter of Indiana back in 1998. It was signed into law by President Clinton. And since the year 2000, when it was first enforced, over 190,000 students have been denied financial aid as a result of a drug conviction. To put this in context, you cannot be denied financial aid on the basis of a rape conviction or a murder conviction or an aggravated assault conviction or any conviction other than a drug conviction. In fact, the government cannot even ask you about other convictions on your financial aid form, and yet they ask you specifically, have you ever been convicted of a drug offense? Now, there has been some good news on that front in that in February, Congress did pass a law which basically, or it was actually, I should say, it was an amendment to the Budget Reconciliation Act, which scaled back this law. It makes it so that it's no longer retroactive in nature, meaning that if you have a conviction on your record when you're 18 or 19 years old and you decide to go back to school when you're 25, 30, 40 years old, that conviction will no longer prevent you from receiving financial aid, which up until now it would have. The law now, as it's being enforced, only applies to students who are receiving aid at the time of their conviction.
So whereas mainstream media gave some big play to some of the restrictions of the Higher Education Act, if a student is convicted right now of even a minor marijuana offense while receiving federal financial aid, they will immediately lose that aid.
That's right. If you are convicted of a marijuana offense or any drug offense while you're receiving your financial aid, you will automatically lose your financial aid. There's no ifs, ands, or buts about it. That is exactly the way the law reads. All that they did in this so-called fix was remove the retroactivity, the retroactive nature of the law, so that students who have prior convictions and then decide to go back to school, those students will no longer be denied aid on the basis of previous convictions. But students who are receiving aid at the time of their convictions will lose their financial aid, even if it's a simple marijuana possession conviction.
Students for Sensible Drug Policy and the American Civil Liberties Union have filed a lawsuit to protect American college students from this unreasonable restriction on education. But the Department of Education itself is pushed back a bit. What's happening there?
Well, yeah, we did. We filed a lawsuit earlier this year with pro bono legal representation from the ACLU Drug Law Reform Project. Students for Sensible Drug Policy is the first named plaintiff on this lawsuit because our members are directly affected by this law. And we're challenging the constitutionality of the aid elimination penalty in federal court under double jeopardy grounds. We're suing the Department of Education in this case. They have filed a motion to dismiss the lawsuit. At the same time, we filed a motion for a preliminary injunction, and we're currently waiting on pins and needles to hear what the judge's ruling on that will be. If he grants the motion to dismiss, we may very well appeal that. We haven't made a decision yet, but we're very hopeful that he will grant our motion for a preliminary injunction, which would mean that if that is granted, that this law will not be enforced during the course of this lawsuit.
Chris, this is just wonderful. So this lawsuit, it'll offer real protection from this threat of losing federal financial aid.
That's correct. If our motion for preliminary injunction is granted, then they will not be allowed to. The Department of Education will not be allowed to enforce this law while this lawsuit proceeds. Which, if you know anything about the federal court system, could take anywhere upwards of a year or two, perhaps even 3 years. We don't know.
Many commentators have pointed to the Higher Education Act as being one of the factors that's keeping students of color, and especially students across the country from lower income families, out of college. How much do you think the Higher Education Act has affected college attendance?
Well, we don't have exact numbers as far as racial breakdown goes. However, it's pretty simple to figure this all out. African Americans and other minorities in this country rely on financial aid at much higher rates than white Americans do, for the most part. And this is a law that will affect minority students and, in particular, students from low-income backgrounds of all races. This law doesn't affect well-to-do students from rich families. They don't get financial aid. So if they get busted for marijuana possession, they're not going to have to worry about losing their financial aid. They'll go through the criminal justice system, get their punishment, and that's the end of it. Whereas if you come from a background where your family cannot afford to put you through college and you rely on financial aid to go to school, if you get busted for marijuana possession, you essentially have to drop out of college because of that. Most of these students who rely on financial assistance cannot afford to go to college without that assistance.
Chris, the Students for Sensible Drug Policy websites are out there reaching campuses every day, but I know SSDP also recently started a MySpace page.
Yes, we have a MySpace page. It's myspace.com/SSDP. We've got over 4,500 friends or so at this point, probably closing in on 5,000. And it's really become a great tool for us to communicate with, particularly with young people and students. I find a lot of students today use their MySpace and Facebook pages more often than they use their email. So it's become a great way for us to stay in touch with young people and students who are concerned about the disastrous impact of the war on drugs.
And if our listeners want to get involved with SSDP, I know you have a number of internships available.
Absolutely. We accept internships basically all year long. We have spring semester, fall semester, and summer internships available. We are definitely looking for interns for the upcoming fall semester. Our annual conference is going to be held November 17th through the 19th at Georgetown University Law Center here in Washington, D.C. So anybody who comes and interns with us for the fall semester will have plenty of work to do in helping us get prepared for this conference, which is going to be the first. It'll be the eighth annual SSDP conference. It'll be the first international SSDP conference. We expect to have attendees coming from. We'll have quite a few coming from Canada. We expect to have a couple even from Israel. So SSDP has been expanding beyond the United States, and we're going to have some representatives coming from around the country, or from around the world, and we are extremely excited about this conference. We're going to have a lobby day on Friday where we're going to be taking all the students to Capitol Hill to meet with their representatives, to lobby on issues that are important to students and young people concerning the drug war, particularly the HEA elimination penalty. And on Sunday, we're going to be having a day of activist skills training, where we're going to hold workshops and trainings for our students on how to deal with the media strategies, networking with other organizations on campus, how to work on campus change campaigns such as the SAFER initiative. So it's really going to be a terrific event. So I would highly recommend any students who are interested in getting involved, check out our website, daregeneration.com or ssdp.org. Check out our MySpace page, myspace.com/ssdp, or send us an email, ssdp@ssdp.org.
And Chris, since we're in our podcast today, I noticed you do have some remote internships available. That's really interesting.
We do. We do accept remote interns. People can do work from home. We generally have plenty of work that can be done, either from the office or remotely from anywhere in the country or even outside the United States. So if anyone's interested in getting involved with an internship, just send us an email, ssdp@ssdp.org, and we'll get you set up.
Chris Green is Director of Students for Sensible Drug Policy in Washington, D.C. Chris, thanks very much again for joining us today on the Audio Stash.
Thanks so much for having me.
We have links to SSDP's websites at normalaudiostash.com. Next up today on the Audio Stash, as part of our continued coverage of Seattle's HempFest this weekend, we'll hear from Dominic Holden.
Can anybody point the way?
This is Dominic Holden for the Seattle HempFest. HempFest to bloom on the waterfront, largest marijuana law reform event to celebrate and advocate for 15th year. The perennial Seattle Hemp Fest will be held on Saturday and Sunday, August 19th and 20th, 2006, in Myrtle Edwards Park. With over 150,000 people expected to attend, it is America's largest marijuana law reform event. Set to the backdrop of downtown in the Olympic Mountains, the annual political festival features five stages of musical acts and speakers, including City Councilman Peter Steinbrook and former Seattle Police Chief Norm Stamper. Hundreds of exhibitors will sell hemp wares, and dozens of organizations will advocate an end to the drug war. A complete schedule and more information can be found at hempfest.org. The Seattle Hemp Fest is an all-volunteer effort and is free to attend. Donations are encouraged. Attendees are urged to ride public transportation to the event. In late July, HempFest organizers filed a lawsuit against the city and the Seattle Art Museum for failing to issue a permit and ensure access through construction of the Olympic Sculpture Park, which is adjacent to the venue. The suit was withdrawn 1 week later after a permit was issued and the Seattle Art Museum conceded access for vehicles and attendees. HempFest, founded in 1991, has been held in Myrtle Edwards Park every year but one since 1995. The region has shown favor to marijuana law reform by passing Seattle Enforcement Deprioritization Initiative 75 in 2003 and by approving statewide medical marijuana initiative 692 in 1998. Seattle is recognized throughout the country as a marijuana-friendly city. The Seattle Hemp Fest 15, America's largest pot protestable, Saturday and Sunday, August 19th and 20th, 2006, from 10 a.m. to 8 p.m. Myrtle Edwards Park, Pier 70 on the downtown Seattle waterfront. the Seattle Hemp Fest advocates that marijuana be regulated like alcohol, adults who responsibly use marijuana not be treated as criminals, and nonviolent drug offenders be given treatment rather than incarcerated.
Anything you search for in life, you'll find it. Anything you search for.
We have a special promotion for Normal Daily Audio Stash listeners who are in attendance at Seattle's Hemp Fest this weekend. Visit the Normal and High Times magazine tent, that's at booth number 429 near the main stage. Mindful that you want to be prepared for any police encounters during marijuana prohibition, ask the Normal staffers at the event and get a free Normal Freedom card, and you'll also get a free Normal pin just for caring about your rights. Make sure you hook up with Normal at HempFest. What a great place to join the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws in person. You can meet up with Normal's Executive Director, Alan St. Pierre, Normal's Founder, Keith Strupp, get a free Freedom Card and a free Normal pin. Just stop by the High Times Normal tent at booth number 429 near the main stage at Seattle's Hemp Fest this weekend. Let's wrap things up today with some pod-safe music from podshow.com. Here's a band called The Joint Conspiracy. We have links to them right up at normalaudiostash.com. This has been Normal's Daily Audio Stash, the growing truth about cannabis. Thanks to Steve Fox, Dominic Holden, and Chris Crane for contributing to today's show. Thanks to podshow.com for all the great pod-safe music. We feature the band Carne Cruda as our theme. Make make sure you visit our website at normalaudiostash.com. That's normalaudiostash.com for more information about every day's show. Red Aphid Interactive Media for the podcasting technology. We're back at 4:20 tomorrow. If you listen to the Audio Stash, cast your vote at Podcast Alley or other podcast directory services. I'm your host, Chris Goldstein. Thanks for listening today. See you at 4:20 tomorrow. Podcasting technology of Normal is made possible by Red Aphid Interactive Media. More information at redaphid.com.